Welcome into another episode of the NHL at the Rink podcast. And we're not quite at the rink, Sean. We're at the hotel, but we have been at the rink a lot together. Game one in the books. Here we are in Raleigh. What do you think so far?
We're rink adjacent, is I believe what they call it. What do I think so far? I think we're in for a treat. An absolute treat. Game one, full of goals, which we didn't expect. Two of the best defensive teams in the playoffs. Full of intrigue, full of drama, and full of noise. I'm still having trouble hearing you right now.
No doubt. I mean, listen, I was sitting next to our colleague, Nick Katsunika, in the press box. Nick said he doesn't think he's covered a game in Raleigh, a playoff game in Raleigh, since the 2002 final, maybe. He doesn't think he was here for the 2006, and he's always pretty much been west with us, and he used to cover the Detroit Red Wings. And he was commenting on the noise in the building. And he was just like, wow, it's loud in here. This is no joke. You hear about it. It was really loud. Nikolaj Ehlers blows the roof off of the place 25 seconds in, does it again. But then the Vegas Golden Knights became the Vegas Golden Knights. John Tortorella huddled them around at a TV timeout, basically told them, stop going east-west. A lot of hockey here left, boys. Stay patient, stay at it. And they did. They win the game 5-4 to take a 1-0 lead in the series.
The Carolina Hurricane, the Carolina Hurricanes, right? I thought that was the most impressive part. But one last point on the crowd. You know, people always say, oh, it's one of those manufactured noises, right? Get up, clap, make noise. It was organic. The thing that struck me the most is they kept getting knocked down, and Vegas kept punching them right in the face with goals to take the lead. And with no prompting at all, at the face-off, every time the crowd got to their feet, started waving their towels, and was as loud as if they had scored a goal. That's not manufactured. That is an organic fan base who understands the sport and has their team's back. So it not only was it loud, but it was appropriately loud, which I think is almost as important.
No doubt. And the thing about it is now we're talking about a franchise that has been here for a number of years. First time they went to the final in 2002 was relatively new. Same really in 2006. They were 9 years old at the time. Now you're still in first generation fans here in Raleigh.
Which is what Vegas is right now, 9 years old.
Yeah, crazy. That is true. I didn't even think about that. That is right. Expansion team, different. One relocated. One is an expansion. But now you're in Raleigh in the second and the third generation of fans, and they get the game. They understand it. It's a great crowd. It's a great building. It will be again for game two, and the Hurricanes are going to have to figure out how to stop Vegas from Carolina and from playing Hurricanes hockey against them, really. Before we continue on here, we do have two interviews, maybe two of our best, Sean, and I don't give us any credit for it, actually. We talked to Nick Dowd from the Vegas Golden Knights and Sean Walker from the Carolina Hurricanes on Media Day, and that was Monday, so the day before Game 1. Game 1 was Tuesday. We're talking to you on Wednesday here. But really in-depth stuff with both of them. Sean Walker just had a kid. Nick Dowd, his wife is expecting. A lot of that going on in this Stanley Cup Final, so we'll get to that here shortly. But let's look ahead. Game 2 and the rest of the series. So you saw what Vegas can do. Carolina got a taste of its own medicine, as we've discussed. They didn't get that at all in the first three rounds. Not against, Ottawa, which was a tough series. It was as a word I used in a story the other day, a slobber knocker of a series. Stealing one of yours, yes. They didn't get it from Philly, and they certainly didn't get it from Montreal after the first period of game one. But they got it in game one. So now if you're the Hurricanes, specifically, I think you have to understand now what you're in, and it is not going to come the possession game and the forecheck and the pressure. It's not going to come like it just did specifically against Montreal, even though you're going to try to do it all the time.
Well, I don't think you can panic. I thought Carolina did a lot of really good things in game one. Their stretch passes bedeviled the Golden Knights.
Good word.
It completely flummoxed them at times. I mean,
another one.
Ehlers, two breakaways. Stankoven had a breakaway in the first period on another lob pass. Jalen Chatfield looked like Bobby Orr out there, throwing passes out for breakaways, left and right, ghost scores. You know, they were getting some stuff from their defense. They had some possession time. If Carter Hart doesn't make that save on Seth Jarvis in the third period right before they scored their goal. It's a completely different game. So I thought it was really even. I think both goalies can be a lot better. But if I'm Rod Brendamore today, I'm preaching patience. I'm preaching confidence. And I think they're right there. I think they need to clean up a few things. But you look at Vegas and they're like, we didn't play great. We had to rally to do this. If we find our game from the drop of the puck, we're going to run these guys out of the building.
Yeah, that has got to be what Vegas is thinking. They know how good the Hurricanes are. But to your point on the Hurricanes, I 100% agree. I mean, listen, the two saves that Carter Hart made in game one, the breakaway on Stankoven, that's a 2-1 game at that time, late in the third, in the first period. That goal goes, he doesn't make that save, it's three, it's back to a 2-goal game. Vegas had climbed back, they got the goal from Theodore, and then if it goes back to a 3-1 game, now Vegas has even got a further path to go, and not saying they can't climb it, but it makes it that much harder. And obviously the save on Jarvis right before Hurdle scored was, you know, it was a terrific glove save, and obviously a huge save. So I agree with you. I think as this series continues, Carolina has to feel good about where it's at, but my point was that there's an understanding of it won't come as consistent as it did. I don't want to say easy, as consistent as it did in the previous rounds they've played, but they're playing the best team that they've played, the most experienced team. From Vegas's perspective, to me, that's what Vegas has done. What they did in game one is what they do. They do not panic. They remain patient. They rely on their experience. Their experience spills over to their skill and their size, and they continue to weigh on you, and eventually they break through, and that's what happened in game one. So I actually think it's weird, Sean. You don't usually have a game one where you then look ahead to game two and say to yourself, both teams should be feeling pretty good.
For sure, and I think that's going to be this whole series. You know, Nick Ehlers said after the game last night, it's one game. There's six more. We're okay with this going seven. Like, they're not flagging in confidence. They know who they are. They know they're one of the best teams in the league, and they have the scars of past failures to look at as a roadmap to get them to where they need to go. They also didn't crumble. Like I said, they were punched in the face numerous times and brought to their knees. Mike Tyson shots, and they got up. And they scored, and they tied the game, and they tied the game again, and they were pressing. We just said Seth Jarvis, and then everybody forgets because it was in the chaos of the last minute. If Mitch Marner, of all people, doesn't block the shot from the point off the faceoff, we might still be at the rink.
Yeah, 100% right. Mitch Marner, huge play, great assist, by the way, on William Karlsson's goal. But a huge play right there in the last minute. This is
What's he doing? What's he doing on the ice in the last minute?
Well, I mean, he's a good defensive forward. That's what he is. He's a really good defensive forward. That's why he's on the ice in the last minute. Empty net on the other side. No question about it. He belongs there. Listen, this series, I think, we're off to a flying start in this series. It is really going to be phenomenal. The one thing I will say with the Hurricanes, and it's been a story throughout the playoffs, their top line has to do more. Now, we're not saying that if Jarvis scores that goal, right? We're not saying that if Jarvis gets all of that shot and it doesn't go right into the glove on a terrific glove save for Carter Hart. We're saying their top line got rolling and Seth Jarvis with the winner, just as, you know, in the previous round when Andrei Svechnikov scored in overtime, right? It was like they finally did this, but it's not consistent. They know this. They are going to need more from Sebastian Aho, Andrei Svechnikov, and Seth Jarvis. And I don't just mean more goals. I mean more offensive zone time, less one and duns from that line.
Their whole offense was the third line. I'm going to correct myself because Rod Brendamore got really angry at the press conference the other day when he was asked about his first line. Because he doesn't like that.
He doesn't lumber his lines, yes.
And he said, the Aho line? The reporter said yes, and he answered the question. So I'm going to say the Stahl line with Ehlers, three goals. Stahl had one.
Yep.
16, almost 17 years between Stanley Cup final goals for Stahl, who broke his brother's record, who was 4 days less, who, by the way, did the siren in game one, looked like he could play in the NHL and beat the living snot out of somebody. Oh. He must be throwing sod around in Thunder Bay.
Dude, he's a big man, strong, not like big.
Farm strong.
Farm strong. He rattled that thing pretty good.
Dude, he looked like James Hetfield. The young James Hetfield from Metallica, ready to seek and destroy.
He definitely did. Listen, hey, so we're off to a flying start here in the Stanley Cup Final. We spoke to Nick Dowd, Vegas Golden Knights center, before it began. Nick, who was in Washington for a long time, got traded late in the season to Vegas. Didn't know what that was all going to be like. We touched on a lot of those things and what makes the Golden Knights and him successful right now. Here is our interview with Nick Dowd.
Nick, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. It's a busy time around Stanley Cup Final. Just your thoughts on being here and what the next 2 weeks are going to be like.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been a privilege so far. I think when I got traded on March 5th, your brain goes just through the challenges of what is ahead in life, you know, like my two kids, my wife, or, you know, even your dog, you know, and you're getting traded to a place that's 3 hours difference in time zone and haven't played on the West in 10 years. And, that's where your brain goes, right? Is the logistics of it all. And then you're like, oh man, I still have to play hockey, which is why I'm being traded in the first place. And that's probably, you know, some of the most important stuff. And so I think looking back all the way from then until now, it's been challenging at times, but, you know, I've said it upstairs. The Knights have been an incredible organization to not only play for, but just like to be an employee of, if you want to say that, because they've helped me and my family out tremendously with the move, trying to make everything as smooth as possible in a difficult situation. So I could basically focus on hockey and I'm lucky that I have a wife that's willing to roll with some punches, even being pregnant right now. And so I'm very fortunate to have her and my two kids. Like I said, I played in Washington for 8 years and we won one playoff series. And like, I look back on those 8 years thinking, man, I played for a damn good team and we won one playoff series, which is crazy, you know, and it makes you realize how challenging it really is to even get into the playoffs to win a series, but then win three to get to this point. So, I'm very fortunate in my career that, you know, although it's taken 10 years, it's to get here is, it's been amazing. So
you won one playoff series and then you lost to the Carolina Hurricanes and you lost to them twice.
Yep.
In your time with the Capitals. And I'm curious, is this opportunity, it's a team game, you're a team guy personally, yeah. Is this have a little bit of man, that would be pretty sweet revenge.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of my buddies I'm sure there's people that are thinking that, you know, and to me, honestly, I haven't put much salt into that. I think, you know, the best team or the team that's playing the best is going to come out of the East and the team that's playing the best is going to come out of the West. And whoever that may be, it was going to be someone that I played a lot of hockey against in my career. So whether, you know, it was someone else or the Carolina Hurricanes, I think they're playing great hockey and so are we. So, I think it's going to be a great series, but.
What makes them so difficult to play against? There's the visible things, right? They're good with their sticks and everything else, but they play systematically in a very different way from almost everybody else in the NHL, do they not?
Yeah, I would say what separates them is you know, they're a volume team, you know, like I think they're going to play the odds, right? So they shoot a lot of pucks in the O-zone. I think the benefit about shooting pucks is that you never know where those bounces are going to go. It creates sprays that go into the corners, and then if you pick those up, now people are generally out of position, and and pucks are going to take bounces that it's tough to defend sometimes, right? And so you play the odds on that, and you take, you know, as many as they do in a game, and generally good things happen, and you wear down teams. And I think, you know, they also don't hold on to a lot of pucks in their D zone. So at the very least, they're not giving you an opportunity to forecheck as much as a lot of other teams do, you know, and create turnovers. So I think that, you know, they play fast, and you know, from their top guys to, you know, their first line to their fourth line, they all play very similar. And then the thing that separates the top guys is, you know, just like any other team, those guys, when they get put into certain situations, can potentially make better plays than some other guys. But I think that, yeah, do they play systematically different than a lot of other teams? No, not necessarily. Like, they're still running similar neutral zone, you know, but they're still run man on man in RO zone. You know, I mean, you know, a lot of teams run man on man, right? So, no, but I just think it's just the pace of their play can catch people off guard at times. So,
and you would, I mean, listen, you would have that scouting report having played against them so often and in the playoffs a couple times too. They don't change.
No.
But for you, I wanted to take it back to you. Just, you were so ingrained in Washington.
Yep.
You know, in that community, with your charities, with every, you know, all the work you did there. How hard has it been, and I don't want to say was it, because it's probably still happening, to divorce yourself from that?
Yeah, I mean, I said right away, you know, when I got traded and I was giving my first interviews in Vegas, like, I don't have any ill will towards the Washington Capitals, right? The NHL, in the end, is a business, and I've seen better players than myself, way better players than myself, get traded. And you know, I mean, look at Johnny Carlson, the guy, you know, the guy was with Washington for 17 years, and you know, I mean, potential Hall of Famer. And it's, you know, guys can get traded, and that's how it works. Do you think it's going to happen to you at certain points? No. But again, you know, that's the nature of the beast. I don't think anybody's going to argue with that. So I think just the biggest thing is the logistics of it, right? Like, I think when that's all you know, that's all you know. And it's challenging to see yourself somewhere else, whether it not be on the East Coast or the West Coast. I think it's a shock to the system, because truthfully, this year I thought there's no way in hell that I was getting traded this year. Maybe next year, you know, at the end of your term, whatever, maybe someone steps in like Vegas did and you know, wants you for a playoff run. I don't know. You see that all the time. But I didn't think it was going to be this year. And you know, we were ingrained, like you said, in Washington, right? We owned a home. My kids went to school. We had a lot of friends outside of hockey. I mean, 8 years is a long time to set up shop somewhere. And as much as it hurt to get traded, you know, you look at the fact that we were fortunate to stay somewhere for 8 years. I mean, man, people bounce around all the time, year to year, a couple years here, a couple years there. So the fact that my kids had, you know, Louis was six and a half years old in the same spot for his whole life was pretty exceptional. I mean, that's a positive, you know, and not a negative. So, but I think overall it's been awesome from the standpoint of is I got traded to an incredible organization filled with, you know, impeccable people, right? The people have been exceptional all the way from our owner, Bill Foley, to our, you know, our president, GM, and then into the locker room, the media people. I mean, they've been awesome. And it's funny because, like, you know, there's no way that places are going to be better than Washington. You know, there's no way that people are going to be better. Like, I love these guys, this and that. And then, you know, I'm fortunate now because I have all these relationships in Washington that I've had over the last 8 years. And now I met an incredible group of people in Vegas that I didn't even know existed. So life's funny that way. But, you know, I said it upstairs too, like the kind of the way that I approached this was trying just realize that, like, the biggest challenges in life often come with the biggest rewards if you get to the end of it. And you know, I've been incredibly fortunate that life has worked out in this crazy way, and we've landed here. So
the media might be good in Vegas. They're no Tom Galitti, our colleague here at NHL.com.
I just talked to Tom.
We want to get that on
the
record.
Yeah, Tom, you're the best. Don't worry.
What's your first memory of the Stanley Cup?
That's a good question.
And that leads into another question, like, what a journey this is for you.
Yeah. It's almost tough to kind of reminisce about it because you realize how damn hard it was and, like, you know, would I ever want to do that again? First memory of the Stanley Cup. I think probably one of the first ones is visiting the NHL Hall of Fame when we went on a hockey trip, and you see it, you know, in the Hall of Fame. And I to this day, I've never touched it. And that's funny because I was from Alabama, and who would have thought I would have been a chance to actually touch it at one point in my career, right? But that was the whole thing, is I remember people talking about, oh, if you touch it, you can't win it, you know? And it's like, and I remember thinking that, like, well, I'm definitely not touching it, you know? And we were on a team from Alabama, right? And so, yeah, that was probably one of my first memories. But, yeah, the journey's been, yeah, it's been long, man. And I feel like people laugh when I say I'm only 36, but I'm the oldest guy on the team. And, you know, it's, oh, I'm at the end of my career. And people that are older than you are like, 36, that's young. But, yeah, man, it's been a long one.
Hockey's got different ages.
It does. Yeah, definitely.
There's
yeah.
And then when, by the way, when you, whenever it is you retire, you're going to be young again.
That's
how it works.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. Yeah.
That's how
hopefully
it works.
In like 10 years.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. There you go. So now, I mean, you just touched on it, the memory you had, you never touched it.
Yeah.
Well, here you are now, 4 wins away from it.
Yep.
And then you can do whatever you want with it if you can get
it.
If you get it.
That's right.
Have you allowed yourself to have that pinch me moment? Is today the day? Was it when you beat, you know, when you advanced to the Stanley Cup final, or is it just I'm in it and that's it?
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to allow myself to have that pinch me moment until someone's going to give it to you.
Yeah,
you know, it's not something that they, well, until you earn it, quite honestly, right? They don't even give it to you; you have to go take it. So, you know, and then you have to give it back. So, yeah, I don't think so. I think one thing that I have thought of is you know, it goes back to my family, and I think what an experience like that would mean for all of us together. You know, I think I lost my dad in late September this year, so that's been rough. You know, every day. So I think about him a lot, and I think about you know, what his feelings would be, and sharing that moment with him. So I think that's probably as far as I go when I come to thinking about the end, because like I said, this, you know, we're gonna have to go take this thing if we're gonna want it. No one's gonna give it to us. So
last one before we let you go, you've been talking about retirement. I have to ask you, what are your thoughts about Ovi?
I hope he plays for another 10 years, man. I mean, what do you do, right? The guy scored what, 35, 36, close to 40 again, you
just
know,
like it, you.
Yeah. I mean, maybe me combined over the last, you know, 3-4 years, maybe. Yeah. But yeah, if anybody else scored 35 or 40, are you thinking they're going to retire? Probably not. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it you know, he lead the team in points potentially. Yeah. I mean, that'd be like if Jack Eichel was thinking about retiring right now. Everyone would be like, that's crazy, man. You led the team in points and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, I hope Ole plays another 10 years. He probably, you know, I think that'd be great for the sport.
Well, maybe he can come play in Vegas next year.
Yeah,
that would be something.
That would be something.
Yeah. Nick, thanks so much for doing this, man.
Yeah,
really
thanks,
appreciate
guys,
it. All right.
Yep.
Really good stuff there from Nick Dowd. One of the best guests I think we've had, you know, on this podcast since we've been doing it. And the next one's coming up here in a few minutes, Sean Walker. But let's explain this whole, I don't know, baby boom or whatever you want to call it in this series. I mean, so there's 3 guys from the Carolina. Well, Nick, let's go to Vegas. We just talked to Nick Dowd. 5. We're told 5 players from the Vegas Golden Knights have wives or girlfriends who are expecting. And I mean imminently expecting. Like, it could happen
June,
right? We're in June. It could happen any day. That's amazing. Now let's throw this one on top. Sean Walker and Keandre Miller each had babies, their first, during the 11-day break that the Carolina Hurricanes had between the second and third rounds. Nobody had to miss any games. Everybody was there. Everything was good. And then there's the Jalen Chatfield story, because his wife also gave birth to their second boy, and this happened right after Game 5 of the Eastern Conference Final against Montreal, and Chatfield literally took the team picture, didn't touch the trophy, took the team picture, got off the ice. He got into a police car, and the police car drove him to the hospital. And I know who you talked to him to, Sean. The let's say different worlds that it was.
Juxtaposition.
There it is. That's the word. The juxtaposition of it all. He goes from the – he's wearing his Eastern Conference Championship shirt, his Eastern Conference Championship hat, and he's still feeling this incredible high. And he goes and he just hears the beeps in the hospital. And he has to completely refocus everything because he's about to have another kid.
Who he named Rhodes, and he was trying to spell it to one of the reporters because they were having some sort of problem. And I'm like, just like Rhode Island, man. And Jalen goes, I love that. Just like Rhode Island. But it's awesome. Like, and it's amazing, right? You think about these 2 weeks, and we talked about it a little bit with Nick, and we're going to talk about it with Sean. Like, you think about these 2 weeks, they are the pinnacle of your career. You don't know if you'll ever get here again. So few players get here. And the challenges of having to balance that with fatherhood, right, which is such a blessing and also requires so much work. And both Nick and Sean, you know, praised their wives and the families up and down for helping them handle this portion of it, right? But, you know, I thought Nick said it incredibly well when he said, you know, anything that's hard is worth it. And that's what this is, right? For them to have to do this at the pinnacle of their careers is a hard challenge. It's hard when you don't have anything going on in your life. So I give them all the credit in the world.
It is remarkable. Well, it's remarkable what their wives are doing, but it's remarkable that they're able to also keep their two focuses, if you will, and the understanding as well of what's more important. Right? Family life.
Yeah, and if you didn't see it, there's a video, and Rod Brindamore talked about how maybe Keandre Miller wished it didn't come out and that it was private for them. But there's a video of Keandre after they won the Eastern Conference Final, sitting on the bench with his brand new baby. And it's breathtakingly beautiful. Like, just the bond that they already share, right? And how instantaneous it is, and how he's able to share that with his brand new child. And, you know, every player will tell you that babies are like superpowers because they don't care, right? Players get so wrapped up in their head, they leave bad games in their head, they go home, they want to kick the dog. Not really.
Nobody does.
Just the saying. And, you know, they're upset. And then you walk into a house with a young child, and they don't care. They don't care if you were -4. They don't care that you lost 6-1. Dad's home. And it's almost instantaneous. Every player that you've ever talked to has said it. You walk through that door, and you can't be mad anymore.
Yep. And that's what these guys are feeling right now. And a number of them will feel it soon, especially on the Vegas Golden Knights. But Sean Walker's feeling it now. We spoke to him before the series began. Here is our interview with the Carolina Hurricanes defenseman. This whole thing, I mean, what does this entire run for you in particular mean that you're going through this now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it means everything. You know, I think it's a culmination of a lot of work since, you know, you're a kid. A lot of people don't ever really get this opportunity. So it's special. Really just appreciative every single day that we're here and we have the opportunity to compete for the cup. It's a pretty amazing ride so far, and looking to make it a happy ending.
Can you just talk about the pomp and circumstance, right? We all know about the hockey and what that means and what's going to come for the next 2 weeks. But as we lead into it, you know, all the things that you get to experience leading up to it, right? The bigger stage, the more notoriety, media day, all of those things, what that experience is, what they're going to be like for you.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's my first time around, so I haven't really experienced too much of it yet, but I mean, yeah, it's going to be special, I think, you know, especially for the Carolina Hurricanes in general. I think there's maybe sometimes we don't get the notoriety that we maybe deserve. So I think for us getting to the finals the way we did, the way we've been playing throughout the year, it's time that this team has gotten the recognition that it deserves, and looking to make an impact.
When you got here, what was your impression of Carolina, and what has changed, but also what makes this team special?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, before I got here, it was probably one of the last places I thought I would have wanted to play, honestly. But as soon as you get here, you really get a feel for the city, the people, which is like bar none has been such a great change of pace. It's awesome. Everybody's so polite. And then you get to the rink and the team, the culture, the management, the coaching staff, the people that we have around us every day, has just been unbelievable since day one. And I know that's something they've been building for a long time. For me to be able to come in last year and experience it, and to continue to help grow has been awesome. And I think it's starting to get the recognition that it deserves as a place that people should want to play. And again, the Hurricanes have been good for so long. And we're continuing to build that. So it's a special place, and I'm happy to call it home. And I've loved every second.
You've done it. How hard is it to play against this team?
It's hard. It's really hard. And people always ask me what it is about this building. I don't know specifically. I mean, you know, obviously there's some comments about the visiting room and stuff like that. But I don't know what it is, but we come out flying in this building. And the fans are unbelievable. The team just buys into what we want to do. And it makes it a really hard team to play against. So, yeah, when I was coming in here, it was not many happy nights leaving the rink, and they were hard games. But now being on the other side of it, it's very enjoyable, and most nights are very successful. So it's been a great experience.
You have a coach in Rod Brind'Amour who I'm sure you get asked a lot of different questions about Rod and who he is and why he's so effective. And he has been a part, as either a player or a coach, of every Hurricanes playoff game except for the first six. Mm-hmm. Except for the first six, right? And it's not often that you find the guy who's the coach, who's also maybe the most popular person in franchise mm-hmm. history and still one of the faces of the franchise. That's different. What is it like to be playing under a guy who is like that and that revered here?
Yeah, it's easy. You can't say enough about Rod, the person he is, the player he was, the coach he is. From day one, he made me feel a part of it. And again, to follow somebody like that who's done it and that was so successful in his career, the opinions he has, the morals he has, the family man he is, the way he treats us day in, day out, it's been amazing. And not to knock my other coaches or anything, but coming here, it was just such a breath of fresh air. And it's really easy to get behind a guy like that. And when you have a whole team from top down, with Stalzi, Fish, Slavo, Freddie, the guys that have been here for a long time, all buying into what he's saying, it's just seamless. And top to bottom throughout the lineup, the staff, everyone believes it. And again, he's just been, bar none, he's been probably my favorite coach. And the staff, the D coach, the goalie coach, forward coach, everybody is bought into what Rod's saying and doing. And it makes it really enjoyable to come to the rink every single day.
How many times have you been close to running through the wall after he talks?
Well, that's the thing. Like every single day, every game day, he has this speech that you don't know where he's coming from or where he got it or if he read something that day. But it just gets you so amped up. And I don't know if I've ever had someone that can speak that well day in, day out and just nail it right on the head and get us ready to go every night.
So it's been also an interesting time for you, not just the hockey, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're a dad.
Yep.
You and Keandre. Was there another one, too?
Yeah. There might be some people saying there might be another member joining the team. But, yeah, wow. So crazy the last couple of weeks. I mean, the time I got to spend at home with my wife and our new daughter for those 12 days was something I think super rare, especially in the season, right? It was so special, and it's been amazing just to, you know, this time can be stressful and stuff, but with the new daughter at home, being new to fatherhood, as soon as I get home, you know, you can kind of step away and forget about it and just, you know, enjoy every second at home.
I mean, come on, it's weird.
It's weird.
You and Keandre, your D partner, both have kids, during the 11-day break that you have between rounds.
Days apart, like so crazy. We were both like, oh my, like what's going on? This is crazy. We were just hoping it wasn't going to line up on the same night or something. And again, like what are the chances that it worked out perfectly? No one had to miss a game. Everyone was able to get where they had to be and be there for the birth of her child. Quite a whirlwind, and for three of us to go through it so close together at this time of year, a little hectic, but so unbelievable, and just so happy to be able to do that.
Was there money on the board for a sweep from you and you and Keandre?
No money on the board in playoffs, but I'm sure we'll be taking care of the boys next year.
And like, it's a life changing moment, and this is a life changing moment, mm-hmm. and they're colliding. Have you ever found yourself like trying to make it all work in a jigsaw puzzle, right? Because everybody talks it's a Stanley Cup final. Mm-hmm. That's all you are, right? For these 2 weeks, that's mm-hmm. all you can be as right. a hockey player.
Right.
It's not. You're a dad now, mm-hmm. and you're a husband, and you're everything else. Have there been times where you've kind of been like, "What do I do? How do I do this?" Because it's all new.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, obviously, like you said, kind of a jigsaw puzzle. Luckily, we have some help. My wife's mom's in town. But I think we have to give a shout out to all the wives that, you know, step up during this time of year, especially being new mothers. Like, they're taking a brunt of it, of the load, and doing so amazing at it. And it might not be easy every day. You know, we're trying to help as much as we can. But, I can't say enough about my wife, how much she's stepped up and been a rock for our family and taking care of our daughter. But yeah, it can be challenging, but you know, like you said, this 2 weeks can be life changing, and everyone's stepping up to help where help can be given, and I'm really excited to just be a part of the jigsaw puzzle and sort it out when we can.
Totally understood. I did want to ask you, just, you know, this team, you weren't a part of it the whole way through, but since Rod Brindamore's been here, a lot of highs, and then you get to the conference final and there's been those lows, right? Mm-hmm. That finally breaks through. Do you get a sense from Jordan Staal, from Jordan Martinook, from, you know, Sebastian Aho, those guys, that this breakthrough is, well, A, it's a long time coming, but B, it feels a little bit more special because they've been through the whole mm-hmm. thing, and you've been through a little bit of it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, again, for those guys to have been so close so many times, I think it makes it even more special. You know, the heartbreak obviously is tough. Some of the Eastern Conference Finals that they've had, some of them might have even been closer. You know, they had the four overtimes a couple years ago that, like, who knows what happens there. But again, I think it just goes to show you how hard it is to get to the finals. This team's been so good for so long. They've been to the conference finals so many times, and it hasn't worked out. So, you know, I think everybody in that room is really appreciative. And again, the guys that have been here a long time, building the culture, the team, the effort that goes into it, it means a little bit more for sure.
Last one for me, and I just want to ask you about Jordan Staal. You just spoke about him a little bit. I think about his journey, and, you know, he goes to the Cup very early in his career with Pittsburgh. And when that happens, guys are always like, well, I made it to the Cup. This is going to be easy. I'm going to do it. I'm going to have a bunch of chances. And he hasn't for year after year. We talked about mm-hmm. some of the disappointments, and now he gets that opportunity again. I'm curious, as you've kind of watched his progression through these playoffs, to kind of see what he's doing and what it means to him.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously it's important to everybody, but again, a guy that has given his heart, blood, sweat, and tears to this team, this organization, to get it to where it is. Again, like you said, he reached this point early in his career and hasn't been back. So you see how good he is night in, night out. Like, he's a big, big, big piece of our team that makes us successful. So I'm just so glad that he's my captain. And I remember, again, we speak about coming in here, and I remember playing against him some nights, and like, what a man he is on the ice. You can't, especially for a guy like me, it's not the easiest thing. And I don't think anybody really has a chance of moving him on the ice. So yeah, it's special to have Jordo being our captain, driving the bus, giving them right messages every night and leading by example. It makes it easy on us. But, such a special thing for him to be back at this point in his career And again, he's still one of our best players. So I think he could play another 5 years if he wanted to. We'll see. But yeah, it's a special time, and he's a special person, and it's a great mix for sure.
Sean, we appreciate it, man. Thanks so much. Good luck with it. And maybe you'll get to another big celebration and put a little girl in the top of the cup, right?
That's the hope and the dream.
Just terrific stuff there from Sean Walker. We thank him. We thank Nick Dowd, the Hurricanes, and the Golden Knights for helping us set that up. Two terrific interviews for this episode. Teeing up the Stanley Cup Final, we're already through Game 1. Game 2 is Thursday night at Lenovo Center before it switches to Vegas for Games 3 and 4 at T-Mobile Arena. Sean, of course, before Game 1, there's always the State of the League press conference for Gary Bettman and Bill Daly at the Stanley Cup Final. It's an annual thing. And this press conference also included news about the All-Star weekend coming up at UBS Arena next year, February 5th and 6th. And it's going to have a little different flavor, an international flavor. They're really, not surprisingly, and certainly should be doing this, riding that international momentum from Four Nations into Olympics, now pre-World Cup. You're going to get an international flavor at the All-Star Game, where there's going to be a three-on-three tournament, USA, Canada, Sweden, Finland, and a rest of the world team, five teams in a three-on-three tournament. Don't expect this to be like the Four Nations. Don't expect this to be like the Olympics. This is still an exhibition. It's still an All-Star Game, but it's got a different look, and I appreciate it, and I think it's going to generate more interest. People love seeing these guys wearing their country's uniforms. It's also a little taste, as Gary Bettman called the Four Nations an appetizer for the Olympics and the rest of the international schedule. This is, you know, maybe the, you know, wet your palate, you know, before.
The amuse-bouche.
There you go.
Before the World Cup. Yeah, no, it's going to be great. And there's money on the line.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm old enough, I'm not sure if you're old enough to remember the world.
I remember.
All-Star team.
Oh, yeah.
Great uniform.
Oh, yeah.
And the Russians are going to play with the rest of the world team. The fate of Russia in international competition is still up in the air. But they're going to play in this All-Star tournament. I think it's going to be great. It's five-minute games. They're going to go all out, right? It's going to look like the Olympic overtime, right? Or the World Championship overtimes, which just finished. First of all, maybe we should have a Norway team. They make it to the championship game. I mean, they make it to the semifinals. First time they've ever won a medal. And then Finland wins the championship in overtime and breaks the Swiss heart again.
Yep.
It's so painful to watch. So maybe Finland's the favorite in this tournament. Barkov's going to be back. They're the reigning world champions. It'll be the U.S., the Olympic champs against Finland, maybe.
You know what? It'll be – All-Star Weekend is supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be just a bit of a celebration of the game and the players, more so the players in the game. And yes, of course, it's also great for the corporate business of the National Hockey League. But this will be fun. This will be a celebration of it, I think. And it'll be a celebration a little bit more of international hockey. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. But I also really like, and I've been wanting this, the skills competition the Friday night before February 5th. This will be at UBS Arena, home of the New York Islanders. 10 players, all 25 years or younger, will be competing in the skills competition. So you're not going to have to force a guy who's in the All-Star game, oh, you got to go do the hardest shot, or you got to do the fastest skater. No, they're going to have 10 guys. The way I read it is, doesn't matter if they're in the All-Star game or not. Skills competition. I think of, well, Trevor Zegras did this a couple of years ago. They invited him to be a part of the skills competition. That was fun. He's got terrific skill. That part of it was fun. I think of the slam dunk competition. You didn't, in the NBA, the old slam dunk competition, which they still do have. I don't watch it right now, but I used to. You didn't have to be an all-star to be in that. You were chosen because you had a unique skill, and that's what I think this is going to be.
And the 25 and under sect in our league might be the most talented.
Yeah.
So it's going to be great.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. So that's All-Star Weekend. The other part of that press conference with Gary Bettman and Bill Daly, well, two parts. One, Gary Bettman did discuss that he has talked, there is discussion about with the Board of Governors Executive Committee and the Board of Governors about a succession plan for him. I'm not surprised by that. He threw it out there. He goes, I know I can't do this forever. any good company has a succession plan that they discuss. So there's been the discussions about that. He's not going anywhere right now.
By the way, just in case Gary is a listener, and I'm hoping he is a loyal listener, we might have to ask him. Happy birthday to Mr. Bettman. 74 years young.
Yeah, happy birthday to him. Celebrated game one on his birthday.
With Bill Belichick.
With Bill Belichick, that's right. The great head coach of the North Carolina Tar Heels, and that's what he's known for. There was that piece with the succession plan. But the other thing is, Sean, I mean, the league is obviously booming. The business of the league is booming. He brought up a valuation for this season, $7.5 billion to $8 billion, somewhere in that neighborhood of where they're looking. That just shows you where this league is going. And it is riding that momentum right now. Four Nations, Olympics, terrific hockey, close games, great races, all of the above. Ratings are up. Like, it wasn't that long ago that we were talking in a different way what was going on. I mean, maybe for listeners it was because, you know, the lockout in 2012-13 is now, you know, almost 14 years ago, right? But it doesn't – like, we were there. We were a part of that. And now you look at where things are, and it's just – well, we feel fortunate.
For sure. And I think a huge part of it, we just talked about the All-Star game and the under-25 sect, right? Like, it's a new generation of hockey players. They want to be promoted. They want to be exposed. Nothing against the older generation who wanted to play hockey and had been taught by the generation before them that hockey, the game, was all that mattered. The collective was all that mattered. You don't celebrate individually. You don't do any of that. That's changing a little bit. There are players in this game who want to be promoted, who want to be stars, right? And I think that helps greatly in growing the game, as well as the product itself, which is at an all-time. The skill in the game today is unbelievable.
Yep, 100%. So a lot of positives coming out of that press conference with Gary Bettman and Bill Daly before game one. But it was also brought up by Gary Bettman in that press conference, the sad news in the hockey world that we've recently gotten with Claude Lemieux passing away. And I'll be honest, like, he was there in Montreal, Sean, game three, the torchbearer, crowds going nuts, and he's the one that does it. And then just a few days later, you hear about his untimely passing. Very sad news. And he is a guy, you know, Freddie Anderson, you know, he was his agent. Claude Lemieux was Freddie Anderson's agent. Obviously, you know, heavy heart for him playing right now. Same with Rasmus Anderson of the Vegas Golden Knights. But beyond just that, Sean, I mean, you covered him. I watched him. And he was a throwback and the type of guy who was all about playoff hockey and was at his best at that time. And just terribly sad news in the hockey world.
Yeah, you know, Gary talked about Claude and talked about our colleague, Jesse Pearson, who also passed. The Claude news rocked me. You're right, I covered that 94 team, the 95 team that he was such an integral part of, and then he came back to the Devils later, the feud with Detroit. Like, people love to hate Claude Lemieux, but people also love to love him. One of my favorite stories is when Sean Chambers was traded to the Devils. He walked into the room for the first time, and Claude and Scott Stevens were fighting. Fighting.
Literally fighting?
Yeah, and he was like, what? Tom Glitty tells the story, and he's like, what did I get into? And then you look at the videos from when they win in 95, and there's Scott Stevens and Claude Lemieux hugging each other and jumping up and down. You know, and players talked about it. Marty talked about it. Ken Danico talked about it. You know, he was a guy that brought out the best in us because he was so competitive, and he was so driven, and he had the team's back. In everything he did, he just wanted the team to win, and he would do anything to help the team win. He didn't care whether it was legal or not. He was going to push, and he was going to make somebody punish him. Yeah. And it really, really hurt a lot when you heard of his passing and the way it happened. And, you know, all I can say is, you know, if you're listening to this and you're struggling, get help. If you're not struggling, check on your friends. You know, there's no shame in checking on your friends, especially as men, right? Where we're taught to be hard and to be independent. Everyone needs somebody, right? So if you're doing good, that's great. Check on other people in your group. If you're not doing good, lean on your friends. Get help if you need to. There's no shame in it. I've done it. Other people have done it. It's a necessary thing.
Yeah. That's life. That's human. That's being a human. And you said it very well there. So the hockey world, we're all going to miss Claude Lemieux. We wish nothing but the best to his family as they get through this very, very challenging and difficult time. Sean, lastly, before we get out of here, we do have to mention the Vancouver Canucks hired Manny Malhotra to be their coach. They do it on the eve of Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final. Maybe not the best timing of an announcement for all of us here, but hey, that's okay. They're in Vancouver, and that's what matters to them. And in addition to that, now they got a little question here. Do they potentially draft his son with the number 3 pick, Caleb Malhotra? And our guys Mike Morial and Adam Kimmelman are at the NHL Draft Combine right now in Buffalo. They do the NHL Draft Draft Class podcast. It'll soon be their show, their time, once we get through the Stanley Cup Final. But great coverage from them, and the Canucks get Malhotra. Will they get another one?
I don't know. That's a tough place to put the kid, right? So Mike Morial talked about it with Caleb at the combine. The combine's going on right now. Caleb's like, I'd love to play for my dad. I haven't done it since rep hockey back in the day, but I don't think anybody understands what the complications there are, especially in a rabid Canadian market that's trying to find its way, right? They have the 3 pick. Caleb's the best center available by most scouts. So it'll be intriguing on the draft floor in Buffalo. The other intrigue is who's going to go number one, right? I don't know that it's a Gavin McKenna slam dunk anymore, especially with the changes in Toronto. Mike and Adam, their podcast, Dueling Podcast, theirs is dropping today, I believe.
Yes.
And they interviewed both those players and talked, had them basically sell themselves to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Really interesting listen. Go check it out. You've already checked this one out. So we've taken care of your whole day until tomorrow when you get to watch another hockey game.
Absolutely. Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Final here in Raleigh. Sean and I will be at the rink for that. And
we're going to be at the rink in 15 minutes because we just missed the bus.
We did miss the bus. We got to get going. Enjoy the hockey.